Welcome to Chromatic Elephant, a podcast about race, trauma, and the impact of white body supremacy. Here are your hosts, Tyler Reitzner and Resma Menakem.
Welcome to Chromatic Elephant.
Hey, this is Brother Resma.
This is Tyler Reitzner.
So let's just take a deep breath. A little technical difficulty trying to get on, but you know what? As my dad always says, one sick elephant don't stop a circus.
That's
is it?
No pun intended.
No
pun
intended.
The elephant in the room,
that's
what we're here to do is start a movement. Bring the elephant in the room.
That's
and
it.
See if we can't create some change. And today we're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Some
a lot
deep
of heavy stuff.
Stuff,
man.
Yeah, man. Deep stuff going down in Texas.
Yeah. It's been going down every place, but Texas is like the fulcrum right now because of destroying black bodies.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
And
you know, especially when it comes to the police.
Yeah.
In this particular case or cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say we're focusing on Texas. And just so people know, when we're talking about things, we've got some references that'll show up on our website. Go to the resources page. All of our every one of our episodes has different references that we use. So if you go to the resources page, they're all linked to each episode. And in this one, what we're talking about is the shooting. Of an officer, two different shootings really. We had the
John Botham,
Jean
Botham, yeah,
and the trial with the female,
yeah,
white female officer,
yeah,
who killed him,
yeah,
by walking into what she thought was her house and
yeah,
apparently
yeah,
was not, and
yeah,
then shot him
yeah,
and killed him in his
yeah,
own home.
Because that's what you do when you walk into your own house. Is that you immediately start shooting people?
That's
what you do.
That's apparently what.
Well, it is the rule. I mean, if you get confronted with a black body that makes you uncomfortable, the rule of America is to destroy that body. I mean, see, people think that the police, just because you're a police officer, that police officers are born on a different planet,
yeah,
like they're born on planet Coptonian or something, right?
Because they wear that uniform, we don't earn respect, we get it.
That's right. And there is a level of deference that we give to police bodies that is structural. It's not earned,
mm-hmm,
right? And so when somebody is sitting on their couch, smoking a little doobage, eating some ice cream, in their drawers,
mm-hmm,
they are murdered, two shots, murdered in their home. And the first thing we do is, because see, this trial has been going on for a while. When this first happened,
yeah,
the tagline was, let's just wait to see what the outcome is. Let's not jump to conclusions, right?
And which personally, honestly, when the trial first started, I stopped following it.
Yeah,
because I kind of preconceived already that she was going to get off.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to get angry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because of what you were talking about,
yeah,
and that trial because I want to get to the
yeah,
stuff that happened in the trial and
yeah,
after the trial, because
yeah,
the whole
absolutely,
thing is
yeah, it's
mind-boggling.
Well, not only is it mind-boggling, it is actually a good way. It actually gives us a good kind of microcosm to look at with regard to what actually happens somatically when bodies
absolutely
are traumatized and when bodies are have been brutalized for hundreds of years. It gives you a good snapshot. But one of the reasons why I didn't follow it was because those types of images and following cases like that is re-wounding to me. I mean, it is literally wounding to me to hear the descriptions of those things. It is an historical process. It is an intergenerational process. It is my persistent experience with these institutions, and it is a personal process.
Yeah.
It is my own. I have had experiences with police officers. And I have police officers in my family that I love and care about and stuff like that, right? So for me, this thing, the reason why I didn't follow it was because this stuff is so wounding. It is like nonstop. Black people, bodies of color in this country are constantly dealing with racialized battle fatigue. Constantly. But we don't have enough of a cultural language and a cultural somatic language to begin to say that what I'm experiencing is a result of living in a society that predicates that the white body is the standard of humanity. Just that is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I am a deviant from the standard. That is trauma.
Instantly and we never marginalized.
That's just right.
Yeah.
Well, even beyond that, it is a trauma that we never acknowledge. We never acknowledge the fact that me being in a society and in a world where the white body is deemed as the standard of humanity, is traumatizing, because everybody that doesn't have a white body is a deviance from the standard.
And it's not so. The other story that goes kind of that yeah. goes like hand in hand with this is
yeah.
the shooting in Fort Worth that happened.
Yeah, too.
A woman
Atenium, yeah.
is she's playing video games with her nephew, yeah. just hanging out on the couch.
TT, she's sitting there. Her nephew is sitting there. He's there, safe with his auntie TT,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
and
which is literally what. Yes, I.
You know,
I read that story.
Yeah,
and, yeah,
yeah. And he watched her get murdered in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to address that
by the police.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that first hit me when I read that was, what more proof do you need that Black Lives Matter needs to exist?
Yeah.
Because, and I don't want to hear about Blue Lives Matter anymore. This is over and over again. We see the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And at first, I used to think, oh, it's about fear.
Right.
You know, white
people.
That's
a cop out. That's a
yeah,
cop out.
Well, yeah. The white, especially when I first started going down this road with you.
Yeah.
And learning, okay, the white body, they're experiencing fear, and they're just going into a mode.
Yeah.
That isn't the case.
No.
So let me tell you a quick story, because this is, and bear with me on
no,
this.
No, go ahead, I got you.
Because I think this highlights what you're talking about. So we just moved into a new neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we went to, we're moving deeper into the suburbs, which is... The deeper the suburbs you get, the whiter and whiter things get.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, with my African American wife, she sticks out in these neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so on Saturday morning, I read about this, and my first thought was about, you know, it was a kind of that Black Lives Matter reaction mm-hmm. of like, mm-hmm. for God's sakes, of course, this needs to be, because otherwise. Because right now we don't think of it that way, because
mm-hmm.
we're dehumanizing people of color. We just have systematically, structurally done
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it dawns on me as the day goes on, and my wife is going back and forth to our new house because we close. So we're
that's right.
And it dawns on me that, oh my God, my wife. Is going back and forth to our new house.
Dig it.
And this is a new neighborhood. People don't know who we are yet. They don't know her.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're going to see a black woman walking in and out of this house that they know the people who are there no longer live there.
That's right.
And it freaked me out. So I literally, I could feel it, man. Like, holy shit. I can't protect it. Like, the, you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
From a somatic experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm feeling trauma. I'm like, oh, I go over there. I'm bugging the shit out of her because she's just trying to. That's exactly what she's like. I'm painting.
What are you doing?
Yeah, she was painting a room, and I hate painting. And I wasn't gonna help her because I hate painting. So I'm going over there and I'm bugging her, and she's just like, she said that like a couple times. Like, what are you doing? Why are you hanging out? If you're gonna be here, do something. You know, blah,
that's
blah,
right. Be useful.
Yeah, be useful.
Don't just be sitting up there looking at me glass.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm nervous, and finally I broke down. I'm like, look, this is what happened today. She didn't even know that this happened to you. This is what happened today. This is why I'm so like freaked out right now, and I can't, you know, I feel like I can't protect you, and I'm, you know, not that you need, you know, and then because then of course she was like, you think I need protection? And like, yeah, from this. Because this shit's crazy.
It's crazy.
A white cop went into a situation, saw a black body.
Wait, before you even get there,
mm-hmm.
a white cop was called into a situation for a welfare check because the door was open and the neighbor was afraid that something had happened because the door was ajar. That's why he called. And if you watch that neighbor, he is so hurt. He is so like
devastated
that he called the police officer to check on his neighbor. Right, because he cared about her, and dude shot her in the chest through a window.
Through a window, and it wasn't about fear.
No,
it was a. There's something in that white body that is looking at that black body, going, "You don't belong here.
You don't belong here." And it is. Listen, this is why I say the thing about HIP. HIPP. Historical, intergenerational, persistent institutional and personal stuff always comes into play. So if you never ask, if you never say that the white body is the supreme standard by which all bodies, humanity shall be measured, if you never say that, then when white bodies are confronted with the idea that at the same time that they are the standard, at the same time that that was created, the antithesis of that standard was also created.
Yes.
Meaning that the antithesis of the invisibility of the indigenous body and the antithesis of the anti-blackness of the black body, right?
Yeah.
So what happens in those moments is at the same time there is this idea, not, and when I say idea, I mean in the field, I don't mean in the head, that I am human at that same time is also, and you are not. The race question is a species question first, right? So when people go, I'm surprised, oh my God, how did this happen? What's going on? And da, 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 da. And yes, there may be some startle stuff. But what we do is we go that the startle stuff is answering the whole question. That's not
that
the whole
is
question.
I
can't tell you the number of times I have read and seen different situations where a white cop has been startled by a white body and it doesn't get destroyed.
There was we'll get to that because there was a viral thing that went around on, and I laugh because I don't know what else to do sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
On it went around on. Sunday after the shooting. In fact, Sean King was the one that sent it around. I love his stuff. And he sent it around talking about there's this white guy, literally it looked like he's on drugs or whatever, he's hitting this white cop with something.
And then his girlfriend jumps in.
And nobody, there's no guns drawn.
No.
There's like because a weird like taser thing that he hits cop hits the guy and the guy just backs off.
Right.
Like nobody's doing anything. No guns are drawn.
That's because he.
It's two cops too, by the way. Had it been a black man, there would have, or had it been a black man, there would have been like squad cars surrounding these.
That's because here's the deal. So what I'm describing is like the operating system on a computer.
Yep.
Is that if the screen is black, if the computer is on, it's still operating in the background. It doesn't mean it's not operating. So what you see in that situation is are two humans fighting.
Yeah.
That's what you see in that situation.
Yeah.
When you see a brown body or an indigenous body or a black body doing that, you're seeing a human and a species.
Yeah.
So regardless of sex, black women are getting and have been getting destroyed by this structure since we got here in 1619. Black men have been getting destroyed since we got here in 1619. That is that and the philosophy that undergirded that destruction,
yep,
was shared among all five of the superpowers at the time: the Dutch, the French, the English, the Portuguese, and the Spain. Right? Those were the superpowers at the time. This is so one of the things that hit me when I talk about this type of stuff, man, is like stuff comes to me and I'm like, wow, that's deep, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that hit me, so you know I'm in the middle of writing my book now.
Yep.
One of the things that hit me was I was reading an article and talking about Trump, talking about, you know, Mexican people, rapists, all that different type of stuff. And then something hit me when I was reading, and it said, I said, when did Spanish become the official language of what we know as Mexico? Mm-hmm. Now that sounds like an odd question, doesn't it? But it really is not. The Spanish, or in other words, Spanish, mm-hmm, did not become the official language of Mexico until the 1500s.
Hmm. Which isn't that long ago.
Right. See, here's what people get confused, is that Spain is white. Right?
Yeah.
So when they started conquering, the people who speak Spanish right now are speaking the language of the people that oppressed them. The same way that I am speaking English, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And the same way that people in other in South Africa speak some dialect around Dutch and Aboriginal. You understand what,
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like these countries came in and took the hands of the indigenous people there in their own language and said, "We're going to move forward with you." It was. Our self-interest is owning this land, and if we need to own this land by genociding you or enslaving you, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
Because you are not human.
That's the key. That you are not human, and it hasn't, even in doing this. So one of the, going back to that story with talking about my wife, one of the things that hit me was how stressed I was.
Yeah.
I mean, I was legitimately scared.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about, like, what just happened?
Where is she?
Oh my God, if someone sees a black woman, they're going to call it. Oh, I can't. And it's right. Not exaggerated. Like, this isn't being paranoid. This right. Just fucking happened.
That's right.
So we know this happened.
Now,
hold on.
Go ahead.
Because what I realized is, as I'm going through this and I'm feeling this and I'm just like getting real heavy over it, it dawns on me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is what black people go through.
That's
this
exactly
is
what I was going to say.
Black indigenous people of color are going through
every day.
From go.
Before they even landed on the planet, they peoples was going through it.
The biology is built in on both sides. Because what I also realize is, okay, if that's the biology built in for them,
what's the biology built in
for me?
Exactly.
And it hit me like a ton of bricks that the only reason,
there it is, come on with
the
it.
The only reason,
come on with
I
it.
Was feeling this,
come
the
on
only
with
reason
it.
I was actually is because of my wife, because
that's right.
I love my, and which it hurts me in a lot of ways to say that because I don't...
But it's real.
It's not like I'm... It hurts because I don't want to think that my wife or my son, for that matter, are like some kind of racial target for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, without them, I wouldn't have the perspective I'm having. I wouldn't have had that feeling and then that realization.
Because it's a personal experience. And this is why I always say to white people, your niceness is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
The structure that exists in your niceness, the structure built on genocide, land theft, and enslavement, right? Your niceness is not adequate to address that, right?
No, so even within me.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And in fact, what it does is it continues to perpetuate you not being a human being because you... You become a tool for me to feel better.
to feel better, feel worse, feel something.
Feel comfortable, and feel whatever.
This is why I say that unless... So my thing right now is asking white people when they tell me that they have been impacted by my book is to ask them who your people are.
Yeah.
I ask that all the time now. And the reason why I ask that is because white people want to do this woke work, right? They want to be the one that has been impacted by something, and then they want to bestow that on everybody else out of the context of community, right? If we're going to abolish white body supremacy, right? If we're going to develop somatic abolitionist worldview and mindset, use embodied anti-racist practices, if we're going to do that, that's going to involve white people actually feeling the pain in order to develop some humility around race. It actually means that white people are going to have to rub up against each other to actually develop culture. It actually means that there is going to have to be some pain that builds capacity. White people, I also have stopped saying to white people, white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I've stopped saying that is because white privilege is a very heady way. It is a very heady thing. It is, even when you say white privilege, it doesn't land in the body. It lands in the head. It's a concept, white privilege, right? You know what I say now?
It intellectualized, right?
That's right. I don't say white privilege anymore. I've operationalized it. I say white advantage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's not a privilege. It actually cuts.
Yes.
Yeah. You felt that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
It's an advantage to have a white body in a society that's predicated on you being the standard of human. Now, I don't give a damn if you poor. I don't give a damn if you disabled. I don't give a damn about if you gay, I don't care. If you in a white body, you have advantages. If whatever identity that white people claim to be, people of color are also those identities. And we have to contend with white body supremacy.
Yes.
And so when a white person said, well, I was poor, I don't give a shit.
Mm.
You're poor. Now take all of the poor white people you know, take all of the poor people of color that you know, put them in a glass house, and when you look at that house, I want you to tell me if are the black bodies at the bottom or are they at the top of that poor house?
Yeah.
You know what the answer is. Yeah. And if you say it's something else, you're a liar and you're disingenuous. You would much rather be a white poor person than you would rather be a native poor person or an indigenous poor person. You would much rather be a white poor person than you would rather be a black poor person. You know it and I know it. It's the dirty little secret. But we don't talk like this and we don't say this stuff. So all of the stuff around diversity and inclusion and how we want to talk about that type of stuff gets permeated into the system. And then that's how it makes white people not have to confront their advantages. And so to get back to the Botham case.
Yeah.
When you watch people in, and I'm not using this to attack any black person. When you watch the end of that case and you watch the bailiff stroking this woman, this murderer's hair, giving her comfort, right? When you watch the judge get off and hug the murderer, then go back to her chair and grab a Bible and give that to the murderer, right? I keep having to say murderer.
Yeah.
When you watch that happen, what you're watching is centuries old. It is centuries old. It is a relatively new occurrence mm-hmm. that I, as a black person, has any efficacy or dominion over my own body. For most of our history, the white body has had full and unfettered access to my body. And I mean full and unfettered access. I mean every orifice, every idea, every understanding, the white body for most of our histories together has the full and unfettered access to me, mm-hmm. right? Now, the black body has taken care of every aspect and every comfort aspect of the white body since we got here, right?
As a matter, it's not just about, because and this is important for white people who are listening to understand, because I think there's this idea that it was a sense of duty.
Yeah, yeah. No,
it was a sense of survival.
It was a sense of survival.
It was either which is important because that's right. An adaptation and not to just survive,
and not just a survival of the self, but also a survival of the little nervous system, yeah. A survival of the community, yes. Right? And so what you have is this thing to where there has been there is a thing in our bodies in a trauma response in the black body that said that we intrinsically know that when the white body gets nervous or uncomfortable, bodies of color get wounded, hurt, damaged, and murdered.
Yes.
We know that intrinsically.
Killed.
Yeah. It is not a cognitive exercise. It is a somatic piece, right? Mm-hmm. It is ingrained, right? So when you watch that, what you're watching is what I call racial caping. Mm-hmm. It is a way to calm the gaze of the white population. It is a way to calm their nervous system, right? So more havoc isn't meted on the black body. That's what you're watching. And what happened after that is that some black people and people of color saw that and lost it and were hurt. Why are you doing this? Why are you taking care of that white woman? Why are you doing this, right? And they went at the judge and went at the bailiff and they're just like, we're just trying to give comfort and all that different type of stuff. Or we're just, you know, we want to forgive. Notice that whenever something happens to a black body, the first thing that we talk about, especially if it's wrong, first thing we want to talk about is our forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Black people don't get to have the whole continuum of grief, anger, horror, despair. We don't get to go through all of that. What we have to do is first forgive. Mm-hmm. We don't get, and so therefore we don't get a chance to heal all the way through the whole process. Notice his mama didn't forgive. That's not the same thing she said. But what I want to say is that there's this racial caping that happens that is so reflexive. It's like being in a meeting with white people, right? And Becky starts crying, right? And then you reflexively see people of color say it's all right, or try and say, you know, this is being too hard and all that different type of stuff. That's racial caping. That is a survival mechanism.
And still abusive,
by the way. And still abusive, wounding and hurting.
Yes.
Because black people and bodies of color walk away from that and notice there's something in their gut that does not appear to be right, but they don't have a somatic language to get at it. So we turn it in on ourselves and drink and overeat and deal with the racial battle fatigue, and it never gets resolved. So the reason why I'm saying all of this is that you had that big explosion happen in our community,
yeah,
with regard to that particular case, right? And what happened and the visual of what we saw, right? And people were going back and forth in the black community, going at it with each other. Mm-hmm. And here's the insidiousness of white body supremacy. As we are tearing each other's throat apart and ripping each other's heart apart, guess what never gets examined? The white murderer. Guess what never gets examined? The structural system that makes that possible. That never gets examined, and that happens all the time, where people of color start tearing at each other as opposed to looking at the fact that the structure is set up for us to rip at each other, and then the white people or the white structure just sits there and goes, oh, you know, why can't black people just get along? Why are they always fighting with each other, right? But the structure and that white woman and that white murderer never gets examined. And that's part of this white body supremacy stuff. She is sitting there while everybody in the black community is going at each other, and that never gets examined. It never gets examined as a structure and as a people. White people never get examined like that, and that has to stop.
She never, because it was an accident.
Yeah,
it was an accident. I mean, and that's what I hear over and over again. I even heard, I think it was D.L. Hughley. He said, even if it's an accident, she still should go to jail.
Yeah.
It's like, she killed him.
She killed him.
It's not an accident. It's murder.
It's murder.
It's murder. If it was the other way around.
That's the dodge. See, that's the white dodge.
Yeah.
The white dodge is always, you're absolutely right. Let's say this woman, I don't even say her name. Yeah. Let's say she was sitting on her couch in her drawers eating ice cream.
Yep.
Smoking a joint, and Mr. Botham walked in there and got startled and put two in her chest. Do you think the bailiff would have been stroking his head?
Absolutely.
Do you think that the judge would have gotten down and handed him a Bible and hugged him and said, it's going to be all right, Jesus is going, you think that would have happened? Absolutely not, because we've internalized, even black people have internalized these pieces, right? And they've been internalized for survival. I don't go at black people when we do this with each other. I want us to develop a context for it, not kill each other about it.
Yes.
Right? I just think, man, I think that both of these cases, if we don't begin to examine these from a somatic abolitionist place, we don't begin to, if white people don't begin to develop, let me tell you something, and I was debating whether I was gonna say this or not, but I'm gonna say it. So, you know, I did this time over in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
And before I left, I kind of saw myself as kind of like a liberal and all that different type of stuff. You know, I had to do some weapons training and do this stuff and da da da. And so I before I left, I had a conceal and carry, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm of the mind now, man. I really don't care how people take this. I really could care less. I'm of the mind, you know, I read an article recently where the gun ownership of black people has gone through the roof.
Oh, it's, yeah.
There are more and more black gun clubs that are popping up and stuff like that. And I'm of the mind now, man, that that black people have to protect themselves. Have to. This is, and I'm not saying, my brother's a police officer. I'm not saying go out and do anything to police officers. What I am saying is that the gun has been used against us since we got here. And this idea that black people should not own guns, I think is a misnomer. I think we should be practicing. I think these Proud Boys and these alt-right groups and 20,000 people down at the Target Center watching this devout racist spew his vile is the fact that the KKK numbers and all of these numbers have increased like tenfold since he's been in. I really believe, man, that and the fact that we know that large numbers in the police force are people who are devout racists,
mm-hmm.
that's what they believe, that's how they get down. I have guns in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Probably will get more. I have had death threats. I have had things happen. I am not getting caught with my drawers down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. And so I know that that's not what a whole lot of liberals want to hear. Don't really care. This is this has been murderous for me and my people, and we need and we have to take the seriousness by which this system wants to destroy us, and anything less is leaving our children to the wolves, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, you know what, and I want to.
Can we take a quick break, right quick? Because they just came. So he can splice this together, can't he?
Yeah. Well, and yeah.
Are we done?
Hold on. All right. So, I think. I'm a little speechless over on the gun side because I've been fighting that myself and yeah. I don't know how I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about it in the past, mainly because when we talked about, you know, teachers carrying guns, yeah. I have a mixed race child. I don't want that either. I don't want them. I don't want people with guns anywhere near.
But people
my son.
Want to. People, your son is not going to be the beautiful little lap child that he is for long.
No.
And
that's what
and,
I know.
And somebody's going to make you. Protect him.
Well, and that's just it is. We can get as liberal as we want, and we can talk about gun control all we want, but here's the deal. I haven't seen a whole lot of black people walking around the streets shooting and killing white people.
Never have been.
Or with automatic weapons.
Yeah.
I do see a lot of white people.
Oh yeah.
Doing that and. Yeah. Those people scare the crap.
That's why I'm saying.
And I don't know why they. But why they're walking around.
But that's why I'm saying they ain't playing.
No,
that's what
I'm
saying. So in terms of having, so
I'd love to argue with you about the gun.
Yeah,
I would. That's what I'm saying is I'd love to argue with you, and I got nothing. I got nothing. So all on
right.
that note,
that's right.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Chromatic Elephant. Bring the elephant in the room.
That's
stop
right.
messing around. People are literally dying.
Yes.
We will talk to you next week. Join the movement. Bring
That's
the elephant
right.
in the room.
That's
Take
right.
care.
Peace. Baby, just
breathe. Thank you for joining us on Chromatic Elephant. Support for this podcast comes from My Grandmother's Hands and Resma Menekin at resma.com or text RESMAA to 55222. Support also comes from Thriver Institute, helping organizations in social services, education, and pediatrics find practical and culturally responsive approaches to applying trauma-informed practices. Live to thrive. Chromatic Elephant is produced and directed by Tyler Reitzner and Resma Menekim, with technical production by Noah Brown and Andre Gobert. Thank you for listening, and keep acknowledging the Chromatic Elephant in the room.